Let's play some cards.
This is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, with a special edition of The Final Table from the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Welcome to the 2011 World Series of Poker. We are at the Rio on the 27th floor, overlooking a nice sunny day here in Las Vegas, and 1 week into this year's WSOP, neither Dennis nor I have a bracelet.
But we're still trying.
Well, we should say that means collectively we're 0-1, because I played no bracelet events and you've only played the first event, which was the 1K.
Correct. Be playing a lot more of them, but right now I'm only 0-1. I've had a lot of interviews, meetings, other things going on, trying to get situated and ready to rock and roll for the next 3 or 4 weeks.
All right. There was a lot of speculation about what this year's World Series of Poker was going to be like, who was going to show up, what attendance would be like, etc.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on the first week?
The WSOP officials are very, very happy right now. The first several events actually beat last year. And one of the benchmarks, as far as I was concerned, there were two of them. The 5K and how it would do, and then the first weekend, this first $1,000 buy-in, the first of many of them they're going to have,
yep.
Would it be anywhere close to last year's?
Yep.
And not only was it close, I think it only missed it by about 100 players.
4,178 players this year, 167 less than last year. First place paid will pay $611,000.
Yeah. Absolutely, no problem there. If they knew they were going to get that kind of response, they'd have been dancing a jig before this started. They were expecting 20-30% down in a lot of these events. They were expecting a lot of problems. Now, I don't know whether it's going to carry through a lot of. There's an awful lot of events through the month of June. You may see a little bit of a downturn because the last three or four have not equaled last year, although they've not been bad.
Yep.
But no matter what, I think the 2011 series is going to be very successful. It's going to be huge. Even if there's a little downturn in the second, third, fourth weeks of June, they're not going to complain.
All right, so what's the explanation for that? Because of all the people who were saying, oh, poker is going to be crushed because of Black Friday, online poker has gone away. How do you explain that so many people have showed up, at least for the first week?
Well, several different things you can maybe explain to it. What maybe a lot of people don't realize is the average player at the WSOP comes out and plays 1.5 events, and they play the smaller events. People build a year in advance a vacation time or a weekend in Vegas or something that way to come out here to have the chance. And a lot of them will come at the very beginning of the series, because if in this 1,000, in this 1K, they may have come out for, you know, reserve two nights and this is it, I'm going to play it and maybe some cash to go with it. But if I hit it big, then I'll be back.
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to do it the first part of the series. Last year, the biggest one was right there at the beginning. This year, the biggest one is probably right here at the beginning.
Yeah.
And anybody that runs deep, anybody that cashes big, will then consider staying on or coming back for another weekend and playing another one of these. It just makes sense. But so many people wrap a portion of their vacation from work around a trip to Vegas to the WSOP.
Yeah, well, I'm one of those guys. I've been coming out for 4 or 5 summers now, and I always come out during the first week because I know there's action here, and I'm a cash game player, and I know there are a lot of other cash game players from St.
Absolutely.
Louis who are never going to take a tournament ticket and go sit down in a seat in one of these big donkaments or even in the smaller ones, or play the mixed games or any of that. We're all going to play PLO and No Limit Hold'em in the cash game area. So I think that there is still that. Plus, with the 1Ks, you get the weekend warriors.
Yes.
As you mentioned, the ones who've never been to Las Vegas, they've saved up, and the guys who have home leagues or won it in a local qualifier or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
And got a chance to come out here and have their first. So for some of them, it's their first Las Vegas experience, not just series experience.
Well, I think there's an awful lot of them that make it, maybe not every year, but they try to. And they come out here 2 out of 3 years, or, you know, as things dictate and the economy dictates, they try to make it every year but don't quite do it. So there's a lot of people that come out here. But, again, the average player doesn't play in the main event. The average player that comes out here plays in 1.5 of these, which might be a $1,000 one, and then he plays in, you know, the $200 deep stack in the afternoon or whatever the heck it is.
Yeah.
And he's only out here about 4 or 5 days.
Right.
That's the average person. When we get talking, sometimes we kind of lose scope with that, and we think about the grinders that are out here for 6 and 7 weeks and are playing in all the different events, and, you know, that's a totally different world.
Absolutely.
Believe me.
Absolutely, so, right. Now, just to put some perspective on this 1K from this past weekend, which you played in, and I didn't know this, but you told me this 2 years ago when they had the first 1K, which I did play in, and they had over 6,000
right.
in that very first one. You said, don't look at that number. Look at the number at the end of day one.
Yes.
Because it's going to be so far down. Mm-hmm. And you said most of the, you know, a tremendous amount of the field will go. This year, they actually had to stop play on day 1A in the middle of level 9. They're yep. usually playing 10 full levels in all these tournaments before they Correct. Call the end of the day. They had to stop play in the middle of level 9
yep.
because they were down to 15% of the field.
Correct.
On a 5-day event.
Okay, well, first of all, it's not going to last 5 days. They set it up for that, for the potential. Everybody knows it's going to be over in 4. Second of all, they announced it at the beginning because they've learned their lesson. We will play down to either 10 levels or 15% of the field. And the reason they pick 15 is very simple. They're paying out the top 10%. There is a day 2, but they don't want to take any chance of somebody busting out at 5 minutes left on level 10, and they don't know who it is because they can't pay him or mm-hmm. something. So they want to make sure they at least have all the people are going to cash, make day 2.
So out of 4,178 players, 624.
Yeah, yeah.
That's 15%. They made yeah. it to day 2.
Well, there's several reasons, again, for that. A lot of people, the aggressive young players that are getting a lot of chips in there, that obviously speeds up the dropping of the number. Second of all, you get 3 times your buy-in. So you're only starting with 3,000 chips here.
Right.
Big difference.
Right.
Now, granted, they start with 25-25 for the blinds, and you've got an hour-long level. There's time for a lot of play. But all it takes is 1 or 2 times where you have a hand worthy of a preflop bet. Mm-hmm. You make a continuation. Somebody comes over the top, and all of a sudden, you've lost a third to half of your chips.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to do.
Plus the fact that, you know, let's say you have a day where you've doubled up your 3,000 to 6,000 or so. By about level 8, maybe level 9, the blinds are 300, 600, and you're at 10x.
I did the math ahead of time, and my goal in there was to be somewhere between 12 and 15,000 by the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you lose 80% of your players, that means the average starting stack will be 5 times the original, or 15,000. So the average at the end of day one should have been, with that down, somewhere around 17,000. You don't have to be average, but you want to be solid. So if I could finish up the day with 12 to 15,000, I'm happy. Obviously, you want 30.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 12, 15, that's solid. You can go on then to day two and continue to play.
Yeah,
but you don't want to come back with $3,000 on day two.
Right. And by the way, because we're talking about this in Dennis's case in the past tense,
obviously
you got knocked out in another cooler hand.
Actually, it was. There were a couple of very good hands there. I want to describe one to you, and it kind of led up to the second one. Table was there. At that time, it was 50 and 100. I was in the small blind, so I had $50 committed to it. A guy limped under the gun. There were 3 more people that limped, came around to me. So now there's 4 people in, and obviously the big blind will be in two for number 5 because he can just check. I look down at a 5-7 of hearts. Your first inclination is just throw the $50 out there, let's see the flop, and let's go. But I'm out of position, I'll be like that. So looking at it, there was, with the big blind included, a little less than 600 in the pot. So I made it 800. Folded all the way around. Easy way to pick up the pots.
Because
mm-hmm. if you stop and think, the only guy I was worried about was the guy that limped under the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else had to have, at best, mediocre hands, or they would have repopped it in some way.
Absolutely.
So you know the quality of hands of everybody else around there. Now, then the bad part of it is if the guy under the gun calls, and the next guy feels he's priced in, and then the next guy, and all of a sudden you've got everybody in there.
Mm-hmm.
But look at the down. That's not hardly a downside. I have an oddball hand with a 5-7 of hearts. If I catch that hand, I'm probably the only one that's going to catch that hand, unless
mm-hmm.
somebody has pocket fives or whatever. You worry a little bit about hearts. If the 2 hearts come out, because somebody could have a bigger hearts. But if I catch some open-end straight draw, if I catch a 7-5 on the flop, I mean, there's lots of different things. You can make that into a monster pot.
Mm-hmm.
So while I like taking it down, if I'd had to see a flop, well, then no problem. And you can get away from it so easy.
Yeah.
So
I had a situation very much like that in a cash game. We're playing 5-10 no limit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's full. It's not folded around to me. There are about 6 players in for the $10. Everybody limps.
Yeah.
And it comes around to me, and I'm in the big blind, and I look down at ace-queen offsuit.
Yeah.
I make it 110.
There you go.
I just want to take this thing down. It folds all the way around to the last guy who's in the hijack seat, and he looks at me, and he throws another 100 in the pot. Calls the 110. Yeah. Flop comes out 6-5 deuce. He checks. I bet he shoves like $600. You know, I mean, it's a $200 pot. I think I bet 125 or 130 or something like that. He shoves $600 in there. Well, I don't think he's got a made hand at this point. I think he's on a draw. I think he's got
absolutely.
I think he's got like 7-8 or something like that, and he decided to play suited connectors in this situation. I don't think he's got sixes, fives, or deuces, and I don't think he's got the 3-4 because there's no way he's popping it at that point. So I make the call with the ace-queen, and I say, do you want to run it twice, which you can do in the cash games?
Yeah.
And he says, yes, please. Can we please run it twice?
Oh, now you.
It's not the 7-8. He's got the 8-9.
Whoa.
Yeah. He was trying to just make a move on me completely. So we run it twice. On one of them, he catches a runner, runner flush. And on the other one, he misses completely, and my ace takes it down. But but it's one of those situations where I thought to myself, okay, and this guy was relatively new to the table.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, this will be fun. If this guy stays here for a while and he plays like that, this will be a lot of fun. All right, let's talk about a couple other things. By the way, our guest on the show today, which I didn't mention, is Maria Ho, who sat down with us on Friday morning here in our suite, and then at noon went down to play in the $5,000 buy-in No Limit Hold'em event number 4 and burned through the field and ended up finishing second. Now, we're going to play the interview for you in about 15 minutes or so, and remember, when you're listening to it, we recorded it before the tournament started, and we ran through some of her accomplishments. This is the greatest accomplishment she's ever had in poker, finishing second, not our interview, but the but finishing second in this event. She pulled down $500,000. That's her biggest payday. She lost to a guy named Alan Barry, who took down about $800,000 and the bracelet. So Maria Ho coming up here in just a few minutes. One other quick thing I do want to mention here is that Dennis and I went on Friday afternoon, or maybe it was Thursday afternoon. I can't remember. The days just
I think
all
it was Thursday,
together.
But yeah.
We went to watch one of the grudge matches. This year at the 2011 WSOP, they have invited back three former heads-up duos. One of them was Moneymaker Farha. One of them was Chan Seidel. And the other one was Chan Helmuth from 1989, when Johnny Chan had already won in 87 and 88 and had come back in 89 to make it to heads up against this new kid that nobody had heard of, nor his ego, Phil Helmuth Jr., who at the time was 24 years old and on the cusp of becoming the youngest main event champion of all time. And what they did in the first grudge match was put these two back together with even chip stacks, $890,000 each, and let them go at it and see who could come out ahead. We watched this from the new set, which you described on last week's
awesome
show.
Set.
The Thunderdome.
Oh, whatever you want to call it. It's wow.
The Landing Zone, or whatever you want to call it. Maury Eskandani, who's taken over the production of the WSOP for ESPN this year, has done a terrific job in putting that together. But talk about, you and I sat next to each other and watched Helmuth and Chan, and we were stunned by the way Helmuth was playing.
I really was. Johnny Chan commands respect and should. He's an awesome player. There is no doubt about it. Nobody wants to face Johnny Chan heads up. That's said there. Phil's style of play, where he does the trapping, where he tries to do false tells, where he does all this other stuff, isn't going to work against Johnny.
Right.
It's just flat out not going to. But I was absolutely amazed at how much control Johnny Chan had of the match. He had total dominant control for that first hour, hour and a half of it. Anytime he wanted to take a pot, it seemed like, he would take it.
Well, the reason was because Phil was playing as meekly as I've ever seen a poker player play. I mean, it was almost as if he was saying, I don't have anything. It's like he was saying it out loud with his body language, his tells, his play, everything.
I was rather amazed. I mean, he just knitted him down to where he had barely a few big blinds left. You know, he starts with 890,000, he gets down to below 100,000, and he ends up doubling up with a poorer hand, and then goes back down below it again and doubles up again. But to allow himself to get down to where he had like three big blinds, I mean, wow!
I know.
Somewhere in there, you had to have some sort of a hand or make a stand or do whatever.
Phil did actually double up four times and almost make a match of it. Almost, I say, because he was just basically catching cards at that point. He was not playing well. He was just saying, well, I got to move all in here, and he was catching cards. But then the dominance of Johnny's game ended up winning the whole thing for him. And it was almost stunning to watch. Now, what will be interesting is this is going to be televised.
Yeah.
It's going to be on ESPN. I know, and you and I discussed this, I know that Johnny was doing most of what he was doing with air.
It
wasn't like he was being the card rack and Phil was card dead, which will be Phil's explanation.
Yeah. But, I mean, I have no idea the cards. One hand there. We're sitting there watching it. Johnny makes a standard button raise. Phil repops it, one of the few times he did. And Johnny smooth calls. Flop comes out there. I'm sitting next to you and I say, Phil has to bet. I don't care what the flop is. I don't care what two cards he is. He has to bet.
Right.
He has to make this continuation.
Right.
And he checks.
He checks.
And I just was flabbergasted.
And Johnny bets and Phil folds.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, wow.
Yeah.
You know, you were portraying, you finally repopped it pre-flop. Finally threw something out there. You know, Johnny has no clue what you have. At this stage, as meek as you've been playing it, I'm going to put you on at least a decent hand of some sort, and then you check the flop?
Yeah.
Now, again, I bet Johnny is thinking, oh, here's another chance. If he check raised him there, unless Chan had a monster, he's probably laying it down again.
Mm-hmm.
He did nothing. He raised it, then he checked, and then he folded.
All right. Now, we know Johnny's a terrific player, and he plays in the big mixed game here in Las Vegas, one of the big games, either Aria or in Bobby's room.
Yep.
And he knows how to play multiple games. Phil, of course, has got 11 bracelets, more than Johnny and Doyle, who have 10, and everybody else as well. But he's gotten them all in No Limit Hold'em.
Correct.
And I think all of them have been in big fields. Well, at least the ones since 1989, when the fields were so much smaller. But all of them have been in fields with a lot of people in them. Yeah. That's his specialty.
Yeah.
But he doesn't play the 25K heads up. He doesn't play in some of these events. You know, I don't know if he'll play in the six max, but Phil's specialty is going in there against a field of mediocre or just decent players, not world-class players. You don't see him entering the 100Ks and the 250K super high rollers, do you?
No, you do not.
That should tell you a lot about him.
Phil is extremely good against a player that, you know, isn't as experienced, isn't as knowledgeable, that, he, again, same thing I said earlier, he tries to do the trapping, he tries to do the reverse tells, tries to out-talk them. You're not going to out-talk a Dwight Pilgrim. You're not going to outplay a Johnny Chan.
Right.
You better just bring your A-game and play.
By the way, we have recorded interviews with Dwight Pilgrim and with Tony Dunst, and you'll hear those on future episodes of The Final Table. And in the other grudge match, by the way, Chris Moneymaker did beat Sammy Farha. They played a best-of-three match. And in the third one, after Chris won the first and Sammy won the second, they played for a long time, and then there was an absolute cooler hand where the flop came out Jack-10-deuce. Sammy had Jack-10. Chris had Jack Deuce. Chris catches a deuce on the river, completely cripples Sammy, and ends up taking it and winning the whole thing. All right, we've only got a couple minutes before we have to break here, and then we're going to have Maria Ho for you. But let's mention Phil Ivey's suit against Tiltware, which we talked about on last week's show. Phil has now retained a Las Vegas lawyer named David Chesnoff, who is just an absolute monster when it comes to the people he's represented. He is the former law partner of Oscar Goodman, who's the mayor of Las Vegas. He helped get Doyle off of a deal with the SEC with a $700 million thing with the World Poker Tour. He represents Jamie Foxx and Mike Tyson and Leo DiCaprio and Shaquille O'Neal and some of the others. He represented Russ Hamilton. He's represented lots of other poker players and even helped Sean Chican keep from getting deported out of the country.
Yeah.
This guy's a real heavyweight in Las Vegas.
Well, not only that, he's a real heavyweight there. He is also a heavyweight at the poker table. He plays a lot of high-stake poker. He knows these guys. So he's a natural blend in there. He knows the game. He knows the situation. He knows the players.
Yep. He played in the 06 heads-up on NBC and finished ninth.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I just know that he's familiar with the table and familiar with the players on both sides of it. So
in Phil Ivey's lawsuit now, this is according to Oscar Garcia, our friend from the Associated Press, Ivey wants out of his non-compete,
right,
full tilt, and says that they've damaged his image and his income possibilities and his business opportunities, and he wants $150 million.
Yeah,
now, of course, that's a number you write down in a lawsuit. That's not what you're actually going to try to get. In the end, if there's any kind of settlement, it'll be a much smaller number than that. But we're talking about a 1, a 5, and 7 zeros.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, it brings into question the whole reason and his original statement, too, though. Because he was doing this for the players, he was setting out for the players, a whole bit like that.
Yeah.
And now he files a lawsuit, and in the lawsuit, oh, by the way, I won $150 million.
Full Tilt put out a statement saying that Ivey's lawsuit is meritless. It's about helping one player himself. Quote, in an effort to further enrich himself at the expense of others, Mr. Ivey appears to have timed his lawsuit to thwart pending deals with several parties that would put money back in players' pockets. In fact, Mr. Ivey has been invited and has declined to take actions that could assist the company in these efforts, include paying back a large sum of money he owes the site. Tiltware doubts Mr. Ivey's frivolous and self-serving lawsuit will ever get to court, but if it does, the company looks forward to presenting facts demonstrating that Mr. Ivey is putting his own narrow financial interests ahead of the players he professes to help, unquote.
Well, but again, what other statement would Full Tilt be making?
Right.
The truth is probably somewhere in the middle of both of these. They've both gone to both ends of it. I don't know it. I have no privy to any special information. All I want to do is somehow or other see the players get their money back.
Yep. That's the real bottom line.
That's the bottom line. That's all I'm caring about at this time. Who owes who money, you know, getting out of contracts, all the rest of it is fine, and let them go argue it in court and find out who has the merits and who doesn't. But let's find a way to get the players their money back.
Now, in our self-interest, we have to take a break. When we come back, Maria Ho. We interviewed her on Friday before she went off and played in that 5K where she ended up second, and we had a terrific time. She's got a great story about her first time at the World Series of Poker. You'll hear that when we come back with more of The Final Table. He's Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We are at the 2011 World Series of Poker at the Rio in Las Vegas, but as always, brought to you by our home casino, which is Harrah's St. Louis, which still has six more chances for you to qualify to come out here to the Rio and play in this year's main event. Go to the website harrahs.com/STLpoker, and you'll see the schedule for this weekend and for next weekend. We can come out here and take a shot in the double shootout. This is the way Dennis became a poker millionaire in 2008, winning his entry at Harrah's St. Louis. You can do the same. And even if you have no plans to come out to the World Series of Poker, which, by the way, every poker player should do at some time in their life,
yep,
just to be in the midst of this mania. But if you're not going to do that and you're just looking to play poker, whether it's No Limit Hold'em or Limit Hold'em or Pot Limit Omaha, it's Harrah's St. Louis that you want to play at. They also, of course, have great table games and restaurants and the Voodoo Lounge and lots more. For more information, harrahs.com/STLpoker. This is the Final Table Radio Show on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast on thechipleader.com.
Kits, does your granny lend you money? Well, this granny does. And right now, calling 800-GRANNY-8 will get you $50,000 for just $238 per month. Call 800-GRANNY-8. Get a low fixed rate and take a three-month payment break. That's 90 payment-free days to get your finances straight. Our customers are saving hundreds per month, and our friendly loan officers make it easy. Call 800-GRANNY-8 or apply online at granny8.com.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis. Today we're coming to you from Harrah's sister hotel casino. It's the Rio in Las Vegas, the home of the 2011 World Series of Poker. I am Paul Harris, along with my partner, Dennis Phillips.
We're happy to welcome Maria Ho back here to the show. Last time we talked to you, you just finished doing that CBS reality show, The Amazing Race. You were on that with Tiffany Michelle. You've done a pretty good poker resume, though. You were the last woman standing at the main event in 07. You've had 8 caches at the WSOP and 3 more on the WPT. January, you finished second in the $10,000 buy-in, the 8-game event down there at the Aussie Million. I am impressed. That is difficult, a difficult game. Well done on that. And then you just signed a deal with the Windstar Casino down there in Oklahoma. You're going to be their poker ambassador. So, I mean, you've been named as one of the ones to watch on the World Poker Tour. Welcome back to the final table.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here again. You guys were a lot of fun to talk to last time.
Well, that's always a pleasure. Before we talk poker, were you asked back on The Amazing Race? How come you and Tiffany didn't do the unfinished business season?
Yeah, you know what? We should start a petition and take that up with Amazing Race. Tiffany and I were actually kind of surprised that we didn't get asked to be on that All-Star season, because we feel like what better definition of unfinished business, the way that Tiffany and I, you know, got eliminated from the show, you know, we definitely felt like we wanted a chance at redemption. But hopefully, you know, that might come, you know, later on. And people have asked us, well, if they asked you, would you do it again? And honestly, Tiffany and I, for as embarrassing as we as we might have come across on that show, shockingly, we would do it over again, because we're just so competitive and we just want to, you know, have a better finish.
As long as you don't have to take the big hammer and ring the bell.
Right. I mean, no, I definitely feel like there's going to be some really embarrassing physical type of challenges we would have to get through if we were ever on that show again. But we'll probably be a little more prepared this time.
Yeah. So I'd love to see you back on there.
Well, all right. Tell us about the deal at the Windstar. That sounds exciting. What's going on there?
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. You know, I've been to the Windstar before, and they have that great River Series with a huge, last year was a $2 million guarantee. This year it's $3 million. And, you know, it gets such a great turnout, and it's such, you know, it's a huge casino. It's the third largest casino in the world. It's beautiful there. And, you know, I'm really excited to be a part of something where, you know, poker's really kind of grassroots, you know, out there in the Midwest kind of area. You know, people still, the passion and the love that they have for the game is not the kind that you see in Vegas or in L.A., where, you know, people have just been playing for so long and they don't have that like fire. But when I'm there, I see people who just truly still love the game, and it's not about the money, and it's so refreshing. And those are the kinds of people I really enjoy playing with. And so I'm excited to be spending more time down there.
We should tell people this is the Windstar, which is just on the Oklahoma-Texas border, about an hour north of Dallas, where they get a lot of their business. It's still amazing that there are no casinos in Texas. Texas Hold'em, not legal, in Texas.
Right.
But those Texans play a lot of home games, and they love to come up and play in that casino. And yeah, they get big, big turnouts there, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
So how often will you be there?
I'll be there several times between now and September, which is when the River Series is. I'll be playing, you know, some of them. They're super satellites. They have so many great satellites running a few times, I think every Sunday of each month leading up to it. So they're really, really trying to get a bigger turnout, but they had a great, great turnout last year. So,
anything new and exciting this year other than the addition of you, obviously? They bumped it up to $3 million. They're going to have weekly satellites. How long is this series going to run? What other events might they have there?
They have, I believe, about like 6 to 8 preliminaries leading up to the main event. Mm-hmm. And I think that what I would like to do down there, and we're actually trying to set some dates for that, is leading up to the main event, I would love to go down there and, you know, give some free poker lessons to the people there. Because like I said, you know, I feel like a lot of those people are kind of more starting out with playing poker and stuff. And I would love to, you know, help them improve their game. And hopefully that'll kind of turn into them wanting to take a shot at entering the tournament.
Well, you're back in the Midwest, which is obviously my home area and that, and I agree with you totally. The mentality there, we have fun playing in the Midwest. There's no doubt about it. Occasionally, we even make money playing in the Midwest.
Yeah, a little bit.
But, you know, it is. It's a lot of fun and everything like that. Let me know. Maybe I could run down there sometime or something like that. It'd be fun.
Definitely. We would love to have you there, and I'm sure me and you will get into some. We'll turn the fun into some real competition somehow.
Now, one of the things I know we do have in the Central Time Zone that's actually tough to find on the coast is we play a lot of PLO. Is there PLO at the Windstar? Do they have games down there?
You know, I'm not sure if they run PLO cash games, but, you know, I feel like they seem pretty open to anything. So I feel like, you know, as long as there's people who want to play the game, I think they're pretty open to running any games.
Yeah, now, Dennis...
Paul will come down and give lessons.
Right.
Well, not lessons, like, but if there's a cash game, call me and I'll be there.
Okay.
Dennis mentioned that you finished second at the Aussie Millions in the $10,000 buy-in 8 game, which, you know, congratulations. That's terrific.
Thank you.
PLO, one of those 8 games, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. When did you become a not just no limit specialist?
You know, when I first started playing poker, I wasn't even I don't think I even knew how many more games there were. And people are inventing games now, like in Commerce, they're, you know, Bidasi, you know, came out from Commerce and stuff. And, you know, I just decided very early on, though, in my poker career, like, I don't want to be a one-trick pony. Once I knew there were all of these other games of poker to be learned, you know, I really took it upon myself to kind of, you know, I waited a little bit until I felt more comfortable with, you know, No Limit Hold'em first. But then after that, you know, I started playing a lot of cash games, reading a lot of books. And then for the last 4 years, I've been playing a lot of cash games at Commerce, just, you know, mix horse, you know, horse and deuce and badoogie. And so, you know, I've become really comfortable and really familiar with those games. And I'm just glad that that finally showed down there at Aussie Millions. So.
Yeah. Well, let me just add.
Yeah.
Is that the sort of thing where you went and you said, this is going to be my tuition? I'm gonna have to lose a certain amount to figure out these games. And the only way you could do that is play in those games. And then after losing a certain amount, I'll have my education and I'll start winning it.
Yeah, I definitely think everything in my poker career has been kind of like that. I think, you know, I've always just relied more on experience and just actually sitting down at the table. And, you know, of course, losing money is a part of that. And then, you know, obviously, I felt very comfortable, you know, playing in the 10,000 buy. And I feel like, you know, my game is on par with those people. And I'm just happy that that actually showed through.
That's great.
We had, well, a couple of different people on here talked about it. Barry was one of them, and he plays a lot of the mixed games and the varieties. He says usually on those, he doesn't get too involved in the no limit because everybody has a certain level of play at the no limit. But he says there's always the weak people that are in there at some game. He doesn't know whether it's Raz or whatever, but the ones you can pick on. You have that same philosophy? Do you have a weak game, a strong game, something or other there?
Yeah, I actually agree with what he's saying because I feel like people like to put a lot of emphasis on, you know, the no limit games in the mix or like even the PLO because you can lose so much. You could lose all your stack or most of your stack, whereas obviously with limit, it's a fixed betting situation. So people feel like, oh, well, you know, as long as I can double up in the no limit, I don't really need to know how to play all the other limit games as well. But I actually find that to be opposite because if people study the structures, they can see that the limit games actually play bigger than the no limit games because the limit blinds get raised in a way compared to the no limit and the PLO where actually if you're very proficient and very good at the limit games and you play and you want to just kind of play tight in the no limit section, you can actually fare a lot better. So I agree in that sense.
One of the other things we mentioned in your introduction was being the last woman standing a few years ago. What's the condition of women at the poker table now compared to a few years ago? Tiffany did it 1 year, you did it another year, Kara Scott did it the year after that. Are women getting more respect and are you seeing more women coming to the tables?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's weird. I've only been playing professionally for 6 years, but in that 6 years' time, I've seen such a growth of women in poker. And I feel like the way that women are treated at the poker table, it is different. You know, I definitely feel like in the beginning when I first started out, you know, there was a lot of, you know, interesting glances that I got from people like, this person does not know what she's doing. What is she doing here? But I definitely find that I get more respect now. And it's nice to see more women, you know, wanting to come out and play poker because I know that deep down inside, there's women out there who have an interest in the game, but the whole environment can be intimidating. So, you know, it's more about, you know, being able to show other women that, you know, there's women playing poker and there's women being successful at this game. So, you know, they're just as able to, you know, give it a shot and do as well as we have. So, yeah.
I've got a question, kind of an odd one here. Now that you're getting that respect and now you're known when you sit at a table, people will recognize you and the whole bit.
When people were looking at Maria before, but now they look at her and recognize her. Oh, that's Maria Ho.
Good point. Very good point. You just killed my train of thought. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. But anyhow, no. What I was trying to say is, don't you kind of wish you could go back a couple? Now that you're a quite capable player, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, you can play with anybody in the world. Wouldn't you rather go back to when you were unknown and when they didn't give you the respect? Can't you see how you could pick on them now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and definitely I'm sure you can understand that too, Dennis. I mean, having, you know, the anonymity of not being a known player or somebody people might feel like they should fear is definitely an advantage. But then I think that that's where I also get the extra advantage of still being a girl at the end of the day. And I still think that no matter, you know, what I've done in poker, what my poker resume looks like, I still think that there's plenty of people who still underestimate me and think that I probably don't know what I'm doing because I'm a female. And so I think that, you know, I always have, you know, different gauges as to how I think people are perceive me or how they're going to play against me. So, you know, I usually just take it on like a case-by-case basis, and I've always found a way to exploit what people think
that's
about
me. That's the poker player. Find out what you can exploit at the table. Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. What's your weakness? Oh, picking on me. Okay, I'm going to use that against you.
Right.
Yeah. Are you going to play the ladies' event? What do you think of the ladies' event?
Yeah, I play the ladies' event at the series every year. And, you know, my thoughts on it is pretty much, you know, World Series of Poker as an institution, if they sanction this as a ladies-only event, then I'm perfectly fine with, you know, playing in it and feeling okay about it. And I get that some people might have a problem because they want to say, well, you know, why, you know, not like women can play, if women can play as well as men do, then why even segregate them? Why not just leave everything as an open event? But the way I see it is, it brings more women into the game, which is better for poker overall. So I don't see how that's a bad thing. And also, as far as, you know, the people like men who want to play in the ladies event, whether it's because they think it's a good value or because they just want to make a statement, I don't think that this is the place to kind of make a statement like that, only because, you know, you should respect this institution and the way that they've delegated these kinds of events to be. And if you want to make a statement in some other place, that's fine. But, you know, I mean, you should respect, you know, the bracelet. You should respect, like, this, the series that has gone on for so many years. And, you know, if they still feel a need to keep this event as a ladies' event, then, you know, I think people should kind of respect that tradition.
But it would be nice to get to a point where there are so many women playing in the main, you know, what is it, 3-4% still?
4%. Nolan came on, Nolan Dolly, the media director here for the WSOP, and he made a couple of very sound statements. 4% of the people that play in the main event are women. That's it. I'm sorry, they make up the majority of people in the world. 4% is not a good representation.
Right.
If by doing a ladies' event, if by this allows people to be comfortable and introduce them to it, I see no problem with that. That's a way to bring in a whole half the world into
this. Yeah.
Now, I don't want to talk to you just as a woman.
Oh, that's
good point. We do have to talk about this book, The Winning Women of Poker, which includes you in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It says Secret Strategies from the World's Best Players. And as I said, you're included in that. So tell us about the book, because we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's going to come out, I think, early July. I think we're going to have a kind of a kickoff thing here at the series. And, you know, there's some really great people, you know, great women of poker in the book, like Linda Johnson, Jan Fisher. And we all kind of have something very unique to contribute to this book. You know, Shannon Elizabeth wrote a chapter kind of about, you know, just staying in a healthy mindset, and kind of, you know, she can come from the whole acting perspective of, you know, and how she's transitioned kind of those skills into poker. And, you know, there's just some really, really interesting things. And, you know, I hate to kind of separate women in poker so much, but there definitely are nuances to the game that only apply when you're a woman, because we are in a male-dominated industry. So, you know, I think that this is a good book for women who, one, are just kind of starting out playing and want to just learn the basics and the rules. And, you know, I feel like sometimes women feel like they can learn better from other women. You know, there's that camaraderie and that kind of, like, you know, understanding where, like, we can kind of explain it in, you know, women's terminology, or so to speak. You know, I know that in my chapter I made, you know, analogies to, like, flirting with guys and stuff. I mean, what guy, like, if a guy wrote about that and tried to tell women, like, what they think that would do for them at a poker table, I don't think a woman's going to sit there and be like, yeah, he knows what he's talking about. This sounds like good advice.
I love it. Yeah, I'm going to write a chapter on how women should flirt with guys. Not going to happen. Okay?
No.
Not going to happen.
And you know what? It also doesn't work the other way. If a guy wrote a book for guys and said flirt with the women at the table, that wouldn't work for either gender either.
Yeah.
Best my addition to that would be comic relief. Would be the best thing for me on that. Yeah. So.
Maria, you were a UB pro. And, of course, after Black Friday, there's no such thing as a UB pro anymore. You've all been let go. How has that affected your life?
You know, it's interesting. I feel very, very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in, because I was only with UB for 6 months. And like I've said, I've been playing for 6 years. So I wasn't, you know, ever a sponsored player by really any site until UB. So it wasn't like I was relying my income, at least primarily, on my, you know, online sponsorship deal. It wasn't like I had been playing so much online even before I got my UB deal. So, you know, I definitely feel like I was in a position where, you know, I played a lot of cash games, I was playing a lot of live tournaments, and I was doing things outside of poker. And so, you know, as far as, you know, my income and my ability to play in the series this year, that hasn't been affected, you know, because of what's happened. It is unfortunate, because obviously, you know, it's nice to have that extra income. And that relationship, from my end at least, and people have asked me this, you know, UB has always dealt with me very professionally, and that's all I can speak of, you know, at this point. And so, you know, I had a good relationship with them in terms of how they dealt with me. And so, you know, it is kind of sad to see that relationship dissolve so suddenly. But, you know, that WinStar thing happened, and it was in the works before Black Friday and before I was let go by UB. So I just feel like there are so many other ways to still, you know, poker's still lucrative. There's still people playing poker. There's still money to be made from poker. The poker world is not going to cease to exist in general because of online poker. And I think people should stop focusing on the fact that online poker no longer exists in the States as we used to know it. And they should start focusing on all of the other ways to branch out and doing things poker related and, you know, kind of just get creative with how they want to, you know, get their income from poker.
Yeah. When I saw one news story after April 15th that said the death of poker in America, I said, really? The death of poker in America? I was playing last night. I don't think it was dead.
Right.
It's going to be playing tomorrow night. It's not going to be dead.
Exactly.
Online poker and poker are not the same thing.
Right.
But we've heard that several pros here from online sites have gotten some backlash from some of the players who showed up here at the series, mainly because their money is still locked up on these sites. Have you had any of that backlash? And what would you say to people?
Yeah, luckily I haven't had any of that backlash, and maybe I should, maybe I'm lucky that UB let us all go, because now, I mean, what can they really say? I mean, we're pretty much in the same boat as they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say to anybody that came up and talked to me about that, about their money being stuck online and on UB specifically, is, you know, I think when you play online, you realize that you're taking that risk a little bit. I mean, it's all kind of virtual money at that point. You don't really know, you know, what's going on, and you put faith in that company when you deposit your money online. And at this point, you know, all you can do is just hope for the best and hope that that company that you did put your faith in enough to say, oh, well, I'm going to deposit my money online and have it turn into just, you know, dollars on a computer screen. Like, hopefully they're going to do the right thing and they're going to be able to, you know, stand up to, you know, whatever that company's, you know, mantra was going in, which was, you know, to provide a safe playing environment. So.
Well, I firmly believe that sometime in the future, I don't know when it's going to happen, that it will become legal to play online poker within the U.S. There's too much money involved in it, too many people doing it anyhow.
Too much tax revenue.
There you go. I mean, we could go through all the arguments. I won't bore everybody with that. It's just going to happen, I firmly believe. If and when that happens, are you interested in getting back involved with an online site? Do you enjoy playing online? Do you prefer the cash games instead?
Yeah, I, you know, after, you know, I signed with UB and I played online significantly more. I mean, I really enjoy playing online. There, of course, is a live aspect to poker that I really, really enjoy, and it's, you know, getting to see my opponents face-to-face and all of that. But I really do enjoy online poker. And
By the way, opponents like seeing you face-to-face, too.
Thank you. And, you know, yeah, so I'm definitely interested in doing something like that. And especially, like you said, I also believe that, you know, poker will be legalized eventually. And when it does, it would be nice to kind of be more out in the open and not feel like, you know, there's this gray area with online poker and not be kind of, you know, in fear that at any given point it could be taken away from you. So with that kind of stability, that's definitely something that I would be interested in getting into.
Let me ask you our classic Rio Las Vegas question. Tell us about your first WSOP experience.
Okay. It's a pretty good story, actually. So I had started playing in college, and I had decided, and I made the decision maybe a few months before I was going to graduate, that I wanted to play professionally. But, of course, I wanted to see through my graduation. So I finished school, and literally the day that I walked in my graduation, I had a dinner with my family, I got on the first flight to Las Vegas. The World Series was already going on. The preliminary events were already going on. And I played in my very first World Series of Poker event the very next day, which was like a 1500 buy-in. And I was like, but then I felt good because I was like, hey, I graduated and now I'm moving on to this part of my life. It was just a really fast transition.
All right, let me just stop you there before you talk about the experience. I want to go back to mom and dad there for a second.
Yeah.
Tell me about that conversation.
where are you going? What are you going to do?
Oh, God,
who
yes.
paid for this college?
Yeah.
We've all had difficult conversations with our parents, but I want to know right. what that dinner was like. Hey, congratulations. Cap and gown are off. Mom and dad are buying dinner. I got to get out of here. I have a plane to go play in a poker tournament.
Right, Paul? No, that's a great question. My parents were not too happy because they felt like their daughter just wasted 4 years of their life in college to not do anything with her degree. And obviously, you know, especially because I am a female, there was this kind of like, oh, you know, that's not a place for a woman to be, you know. And also coming from a very traditional Chinese family, you know, the standard job path is like a doctor, lawyer, you know, all of those
things. Engineer.
Yeah. And you know, that was just never something that really interested me. And, you know, I guess I have to thank the fact that I just never listen to what people tell me, because my parents definitely tried to stop me, and I just kind of told them this is what I wanted to do, and I haven't looked back since. And you know, obviously I've come a long way since then, and I can't really say that they love and completely agree with what I'm doing.
Really?
Even though I've had success, but you know, they're at least not on my case about it every single day.
Mom's on the phone to you every week saying, are you still playing poker?
I swear, that's what she does. It's so funny. She'll like call me once a week and she'll be like, so you're sure you still want to do this poker thing? I'm like, yeah, Mom, it's been 6 years. I'll let you know. I'm pretty sure it's not changing on a weekly basis. I'll give you some heads up when I'm ready to not play poker anymore. She's so cute, though.
Okay, so now let's go back to the story. So you leave after dinner, and you come to Las Vegas, and you buy into the 1500, and...
And
you walked into the Rio. Was it the first time at the Rio?
It was my first time at the Rio, and you know, it was the first time just kind of seeing this craziness that is the World Series of Poker. And I graduated in 2005, and that was just when the poker boom was happening, and this was like just starting to get really crazy. And so I was a little intimidated, and it was really, really interesting, but it was so exciting to be a part of it. And of course, needless to say, I didn't last very long in that tournament. I wasn't very good at tournaments then. I just kind of wanted to play one. And I don't know if I should tell this part, but this is something I should have written in the girls' book. Yeah, I cried. I might have cried after I busted out of my first World Series of Poker event. Not full-on cry, just shed a little tear. Maybe that's a girly thing. But, you know, but it was just so much fun to be a part of, and I'll never forget it. And, you know, luckily for me, you know, my World Series of Poker has turned out, has had better results since then, so...
And then a couple of years later was the first time I met you, when you were crushing a couple of sit-and-goes downstairs.
Yes,
and then going on to tremendous success. And now this summer, what's the plan for this year? How many events do you think you'll be playing?
I have 33 events on the schedule, but if I make day twos like I made in the 5K, then I won't be playing 33 events because a lot of them overlap, you know? So, I have a ton of tournaments on the schedule, and... I mean, obviously, I want to win a bracelet, and I really want to, you know, solidify my career with a win. And you know, obviously, this is the best place to do it. So I'm really, really trying to be disciplined and stay focused on that this year.
Yeah. If you want to play poker, you need to be in Vegas in June.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Everything in the world is going on, and the WSOP is the biggest of the bunch. So there's
absolutely
no doubt about that one. So day two already of an event. Mm-hmm. More day twos coming up. Any special strategy for the main event? Anything you can give to our readers?
Yeah, we have a lot of listeners who are going to be playing the main event for the first time ever. You know, we know people who win them in home leagues or in casino qualifiers or whatever. They come out here, first time that they sit down, even if it's not their own $10,000, they won it in some other way, they sit down in the main event with, hopefully this year, 5,000 people in it, maybe, we'll see. What would you say to them?
You know, I think the best advice I can give people who, you know, are kind of new to playing the main event is I think sometimes they get so caught up and overwhelmed by like, oh my God, this is the main event. Like, but what they don't realize is you can't win this tournament in one day. And Dennis, I'm sure you know from firsthand experience, you know, you have to have a lot of patience. And I think people get overly excited and the structure is really good where they're like, oh, I want to play all these hands. But then what they don't realize is you can kind of afford to like, in the beginning, at least, sit back, let other people make mistakes. There's plenty of amateurs out there that don't know what they're doing. And if you kind of let other people make the mistakes and you just sit there and capitalize on it, that sometimes is a better strategy than like going, you know, pedal to the metal, like full speed ahead. Because, yeah, you can't, even if you amass the chip as the chip leader by the end of the day, you have 10 more days to go after that. So it's all kind of about, you know, progressing kind of like slowly and steadily and picking good spots and not necessarily just trying to, you know, get really involved in big pots just, you know, because you're so excited that you're at the World Series.
I think that's great, great advice, and it's something that I've said similar to it. I actually told a guy, I don't even think I told you this, I told a guy last year who was nervous, he was literally shaking before he's sitting down at the table, saying, I've never done this before, I'm looking at this room, every table I see somebody I recognize, I'm petrified. I said, this is what you need to do, keep it simple. You have a two-hour level. For the first 2 hours, look at your cards. If it's not aces, kings, queens, or ace-king, muck them. I don't give a damn. Just gone. period, till you get comfortable, you will realize at some stage, maybe half an hour, maybe 2 hours into it, all of a sudden you can play with these guys. And once you start getting that, then go back to your normal game and everything. But till then, look at the chips you've got. You've got 30,000 in chips. You don't have to play the entire first day a single hand, and you would make day two. Think of that. You have so much freedom here. Sit back, relax, and then when you start to enjoy the game again, start playing.
And the other aspect of it, I've never played the main event, and I probably won't, but I've played plenty of other tournaments, and the other thing to remember is you're not playing against 5,000 people. You're playing against 9. It's
true.
A poker table. It's a full ring game of 10 people. Think of it that way. Yeah, they're going to be changing as people are moving tables, and you're going to have to move and all that. But at any one time, all you have to do is play the people at your table and their chip stacks and their talent level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No matter how you do it, there's only 9 people at your table.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
It's a good point.
Well, congratulations on the new endorsement deal and all the rest, and we hope you have a great summer here at the World Series of Poker. I think you're a terrific spokesperson for the game, and we appreciate you coming back on the show.
Thank you. This is fun.
Maybe I'll see you at the WinStar.
Yes, definitely.
All right, cool.
That's Maria Ho in an interview we recorded on Friday morning just before she went off to the 5K No Limit Hold'em, event number 4 of this year's World Series of Poker, in which she finished second to Alan Barry, collecting a $500,000 prize. Congratulations to her. That's a great start to her summer. We'll be back next week with more coverage of the 2011 World Series of Poker from the Rio in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris alongside Dennis Phillips. You can get our podcasts on thechipleader.com. All 123 shows are on there. You can also click the bar on the right side where we list all of our guests. So if you want to listen to any one specific show, that's the way to go to them. Or you can subscribe via iTunes and catch them all downloaded automatically every week. You can also listen to us live as we air in St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com every Tuesday at 3 o'clock. Until then, goodbye from Las Vegas.